I don't know about you, but my day job is in the corporate world. And I don't know how many times I have had some grand boss or great grand boss, you know, my boss's boss, or whatever, come in and give a presentation to our group or our office and whatnot. And usually, it's all about increasing revenue, increasing projects. Grow. Get bigger, get more money. I have yet to see somebody walk into a place, some big mucky muck, some, you know, grand, high, exalted master of the company, come in, walk down to the lowliest guy in the place, maybe the guy who's in the mail room or the guy on the loading dock, or somebody who's generally in corporate life considered to be the guy in the corner. And this big, high corporate mucky muck turn to the division manager and say to him, your job is that guy grows. How absurd. How incredible. I mean, that in our business world, that would never happen because it's all about money, big. Unfortunately, corporations started, my understanding is that corporate structure kind of grew out of the structure of churches and congregations as sort of the model for corporate structure. Unfortunately, now what's happening in our churches and congregations is we're taking the corporate model and we're bringing that back in. So that when I meet with other pastors, usually I can almost guarantee what the first and the second question is. First question is, how many people are in your congregation? And sometimes, not always, but sometimes, question number two is, how big is your offering? So somehow we have picked up this corporate model of big, money, things, building, bigger. And the question is, what's God's model for leaders among His people? Turn me to John chapter 21. This is our last segment of the book of John. And I think this is aptly appropriate. In some sense, this little section is a postscript to John. The early believing community had no doubt that the whole thing was written by John. But for some reason, he concluded his gospel in chapter 20, and for some reason he had to go back and write chapter 21. Something was left unsaid. There are enough loose ends left untied that God inspired him to write a postscript onto the end of it. And this postscript dealt with that intimate little meeting, this breakfast meeting between Yeshua and his disciples, as his disciples had gone a little bit astray. They hadn't started doing evil, they had just stopped doing good. They were off fishing on the lake. They were probably on their way to where he had commanded them to go. So in a sense, they were still more or less going in the direction. They were obeying the letter of the command, but maybe not the spirit. And they were off on the lake, maybe a little disheartened and maybe a little confused. And he was bringing them together. But there's still some loose ends involved. The last time we had really dealt with Peter, well, the second to the last time, because the last time he was just with the apostles and disciples when Yeshua appeared. Before that, Peter denied Yeshua three times. And Yeshua predicted it. And Peter said, not I, Lord, never. I would never deny you. And mere hours later, there he was denying him with an oath, some of the Gospels say. He was swearing that he never knew him. So now you got Peter, who's denied Yeshua three times. The question is, what happened to Peter? What happened to Peter? By by the way, by the time this gospel was written, most likely Peter had already been martyred. So you have to bear that in mind. And that might have been one reason for this postscript, and we'll see when we get further into it. So down in verse 15, "So when they had finished breakfast, Yeshua said to Simon Peter, 'Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?' He said to him, 'Yes, Lord, you know that I love you.' He said to him," build a huge following. No, that's not what he said. He didn't say, "Bring in lots of offering." He didn't say that. He didn't say, "Get lots of acclaim. Be a famous speaker." No, he didn't say that. He said, "Tend my lambs. Tend my lambs." This is true, in some sense, of each and every one of us, whether we are in official ministry or not. Too much of our day, I think somebody when I was growing up described the Playboy philosophy, but it's certainly true of the cultural philosophy, and that is to love things and use people instead of loving people and using things. And so we too much in our daily lives, whether it be in our neighborhoods or on the jobs, it's more tempting on our day jobs, you know, our 40-hour a week jobs, to use people for our own advancement. And it is always and everywhere in Yeshua's mind, and even here talking to Peter, that what is important is not the movement or the masses, but that the masses consist of individuals. And the goal is not to minister to the masses, but to minister to each and every person, one by one. We do not have a corporate relationship to God through Yeshua. We have an individual relationship with God through Yeshua. And that He is always and everywhere intended that relationship to be personal and intimate, and He cares deeply for each and every one of our individual welfare. Feed my lambs. I mean, you know, there's even an American ideal. There's something. There's that cowboy ideal that you are taking care of a herd of cattle, big thundering cattle, you know, big men on horses with big ropes. We're not talking about big cattle. We're not even talking about big sheep. We're talking about little lambs. In a sense, it's kind of touching because we look at our own lives and we look at all we've done that's evil and wrong, and to think that God thinks of us as little lambs, or, you know, in our culture we don't keep lambs around the house nowadays, more like mischievous puppies, you know, puppies that tend to chew their way through like buzzsaws, anything and leap down. Personal witness to that, but that God would still think of us fondly is one thing, and that's the charge He gives to Peter as what Yeshua considers to be this pillar of leadership upon which Peter needs to build his ministry, is on feeding the lambs. Not driving the massive herd of cattle, thundering hooves, stirring music in the background, but there in the barn, feeding the lambs, the little lambs. In one sense, it's a humbling sort of thing. It's not the thing that we as people think about doing. It's that it's taking care of that guy in the mailroom or the receiving dock. You know, the thing that we would be aghast, we would be shocked if a CEO would do that. But yet, what we are commanded to as believers is to minister each and every person and not use people for our advancement. That gets to be really tough. Particularly when you're leading a ministry, that whole idea of what does it mean to feed a lamb? What does it mean to take care of it? I mean, the lamb, I'm sure, I don't know what's good to lambs. I know, let's take it into human kids, because I know what human kids are like, that human kids would love to eat candy all day. So this is not saying to feed the lambs what they crave, but feed the lambs what they need, which sometimes is difficult because lambs, and I count myself as a lamb here, so I'm not poking at you guys, but lambs are by their nature stupid. And so lambs don't know what's best for themselves. And so as being entrusted by God with some of His flock, whether in a formal or an informal ministry, in one sense you're saying, oh, boy, I'm glad I'm not pastoring, I'm glad I'm not leading a congregation. But yet, you meet every week over with lunch with this neighbor, we talk to him about God, and congratulations, you've just adopted a lamb. Feed my lambs. Something doesn't show up in the English, by the way, which is another undercurrent that is going on here, is that Yeshua asked Peter, do you love, using the agapeo word, and Peter replies, yes, Lord, I, the phileo verb, love you. Sometimes much ado has been made about this, and I did a lot of reading about this, and there is not wide agreement as to how, what exactly the term, the different terms mean. One commentator says they actually don't mean anything at all different. They're exact synonyms. But I'm kind of hesitant on that. Every word that you choose, there's no such thing as an exact synonym. I mean, if you choose, for example, man versus male, although in some sense they're synonyms, there are connotations in along with man that are not there in the word male. So although they are technically synonyms, there's still some baggage that the word carries along. One of the problems is that we are not native Koine Greek speakers, so some of the nuances are lost on us. The words were synonyms and the difference actually meant nothing. I find that hard to believe, like I said, because there are no such thing as 100% synonyms, or nobody would use the second word. Right? So nobody would use it. There's different ways. I could go on and on. You could talk about a chair versus a seat. There's nuances that come along with it that from the different things. Some people say that agapeo was a higher term than phileo, and what Yeshua was calling Peter to was a higher sense of love, and Peter was saying, well, I can't achieve that kind of love, that kind of self-sacrificial high love for you. Instead, I'm just going to say phileo. And generally, people are agreed that phileo is a brotherly love. It is a love of deep friendship. It is a love of the emotions. It is saying that I just can't get enough of you. I just love hanging out with you. You're my buddy. You know, we're gonna do things together. That's phileo love. What people are in disagreement with is what the agapeo means. Agapeo would seem to have kind of been adopted by some of the early writers of the New Covenant that seemed to imply something different. The agapeo seems to carry along with it the baggage of loving something because it is inherently deserving of love. So that you would love something not just because you're hanging out together, but if you had been with someone who just inspires you, like certain military leaders, or you could say that their troops love them in terms of being fully dedicated to them, of recognizing in them that strength of character which drives them to accomplish great things. That is sort of the agapeo. So that's why there is some disagreement that some people think that agapeo was actually a lower form of love because it wasn't as personal. I tend to come down to the way I kind of look at it, my opinion. You know, you write on, you know, texting or on email, IMHO, in my humble opinion, or in my not-so-humble opinion, that it seems to me that it wasn't a question of higher or lower, but that Yeshua was calling Peter to a different kind of love than Peter was really used to dealing with. that Yeshua was standing before him asking for the kind of love that was appropriate to Emmanuel, God with us, to God among us, to that inspiring self-sacrificial love that he would abandon everything because of who Yeshua was. And Peter responding, saying that, look, I have followed you, I have been at your side, I have been your comrade, I love you as a friend, as a rabbi, I have walked with you, I know you, you are my deepest friend, and that is my love for you. And I think it is a different kind of thing that Yeshua is calling him to than he is willing to give at that point. That Peter is trying to get out of the box, out of the sort of thing where this last week we had one of our politicians choose this woman as a vice president. She's from a small town. To picture what her neighbors are thinking, right? It's like, or the people who go to school with her kids. They're his classmates. Then now all of a sudden these Secret Service agents are barreling into the classrooms with them. That just, it's like trying to conceive this woman who probably baked brownies for the high school fundraiser that now is a candidate for Vice President of the United States. It's like somebody who was used to her being the PTA mom and maybe is a dearest friend as a PTA mom, now has to get their head around her now being the potential of being the Vice President of the United States. That's the sort of thing that Peter had to deal with. He's got this relationship with Yeshua, and although he has seen incredible things that Yeshua has done, even that morning, I mean, just a few weeks earlier, he'd been dead. So here he is standing before him that very morning, trying to get his head around those incredible things. In a sense, he has to step out of that relationship with Yeshua and realize that the personal relationship has to go in a different direction. For one thing, Yeshua was going back to heaven. He was ascending. And Peter could not have that day-to-day physical face-to-face relationship with Yeshua. But he still had to have that deep abiding dedication to him. Verse 16. He said to him a second time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, shepherd my sheep. It's also interesting, by the way, in a sense, this is the recalling of Peter. Because Simon, son of John, was the name he was born with. Peter was the name that Yeshua gave him. And Yeshua is not calling him by the name he gave him. So in a sense, it is a restoration, it is a recalling of Peter into that fellowship, into that relationship with him. And once again, we have the disagreement between words. Yeshua once again repeats, calling him back. Do you love me in this high sense, this sense of duty, of dedication? And Peter replies, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. In another sense, he's accepting, he's agreeing that Yeshua knows of his devotion to him despite his fall. And the second thing he said to him was, shepherd his sheep. Once again, we're in synonym territory between feeding and shepherding. But the shepherding has more an idea. The first one was more feeding the flock good stuff. This is more not only feeding, but giving direction to the care of the flock. So this is a little bit bigger term. And the sheep are a little bigger. Rather than little tiny lambs, these are just the little lambs. These are just the small sheep. We're building a picture of God's plan for leaders in his community. And it's not about being on television. I was on television one time. I think all about five people in the area saw it. But I was on television one time. But it's not about, I'm talking about the big celebrity status. It's not about that. It's not about, in fact, it scares me. I don't quite know how to deal with the notion of the professional pastor, of people who seek it not for a calling, but as an occupation. I haven't quite come to grips with that. That certainly, and that's not how I came to where I am. I didn't say when I was growing up, I want to be a pastor, but God kind of picked me up by the scruff of the neck and said, you, over here. A little bit of squeaking, no, I don't want to do it. You, over here. And just that calling so that that I could do nothing else. It's like there have been times when I have not been leading a flock and I've been miserable. My wife can testify that I've been miserable. It's just like the urge that I had to do it. It's something that God put there. But it's not about professionalism. And I have met men, and it's not unusual to talk to someone and say, you know, they just say, "Oh, I'm changing churches. I'm accepting this call at this other church." And you say, "Well, why is that?" They say, "Well, it's a bigger church, and they can pay me more." And I've heard people say that. Not rarely either. It's a common thing. Is that typically there are people in the pastorate that decide that this is their career. And they want to get career advancement. So they start with a small church somewhere, and they get a reputation, and then they apply for a job at a bigger church in a more popular area, and they try to go all the way up. And it's a professional advancement and stuff like that. It's the corporate model, once again. It's the leader of the congregation as CEO. I don't like that model. And I don't think you should like that model either, because that's not the model that he gave to Peter. The model that he gave to Peter is, it's not about you, the servant, it's about the one being served. It's about, how can I do the best for this other individual that needs help? Sometimes it means your time. Sometimes it means not helping. Why I say that is, that's kind of a tough love. There are times when I kind of debate on how much to help someone, because I know that the best thing for them is if I don't help them. Because I want people to have a dependence upon God, not a dependence upon me. I mean, I've seen other churches where the pastor has tried to help everybody at any time, at every time, and then what's happened there is that the people become so utterly dependent on the pastor that if the pastor goes away on vacation, their life falls apart. I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen. My job is to feed and tend the flock, but to point them back to the master shepherd. I'm just another sheep. I've just been another sheep who's been told to watch this pen for a while, but it's not my flock. And you notice here, Yeshua didn't say, "Tend your lambs." Attend my lambs. That's another thing that everyone who desires to serve God has to understand, whether they are ministering with a formal title or an informal title. Like I said, a couple guys at work get together over lunchtime, and maybe once a week you open a Bible, or maybe you talk to them about some things about God. That's your flock. That's your flock. And God has desired, they are His flock, and we're just tending it for Him. So once again, there was this conflict of words. Verse 17, he said to him the third time, "Simon, son of God, do you love me?" And this time, Yeshua uses Peter's word. In other words, he's saying, "Peter, are you really telling me the truth? That you truly, phileo, love me? Is that really true?" And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" So Peter caught it. Peter caught it. I think that was why he was so distressed. I think a combination of that and the fact that he had denied Yeshua three times, and now he'd been asked by Yeshua three times, but also on that third time, that Yeshua was not only trying to pull him up to a higher word, but Yeshua came to Peter's word and said, "Are you really sure that you, phileo, love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know all things." Now Peter has now expanded his response to an appreciation, to an acknowledgement of who Yeshua is. I mean, on one hand, that what Peter had said up to this point is something you'd say to a friend. Somebody would say to you, "Do you really care?" "Well, you know that I care, because I've demonstrated to you that I care." In this case, Peter goes beyond that and says that you know all things, which is a lot higher thing. You know that I love you. And Yeshua said to him, tend my sheep. Tend my sheep. Three times repeated, tend his sheep. That's the job. You know, job description. I don't know if you've ever worked at a place with a job description. And it usually goes on for like five pages of boilerplate, and then the last line is other duties as assigned, which is usually what you wind up doing. But this is the job description that Yeshua gave to the leadership of his people, and there were no other duties as assigned. It was three times, feed my lambs, shepherd my sheep, tend my sheep. It's not about the leader. It's not about size of congregations. It's not about money. It's not about power. It's about people. And it's not about a crowd of people. It's about people one by one. I can just imagine that the pastor of a great big mega church gets and stands before the Lord, his, you know, his life in review, and Yeshua asks him one question, and the question is, how's Mary doing? And the guy smiles and says, Mary, who's Mary? He said, well, she sat in your front row for 23 years. How's she doing? I bet you a lot of people couldn't answer that. How Mary's doing. Or Joe or Chuck or Harry or Frank or whoever else. I even knew a man who stepped aside from a smaller congregation, taking on a larger one, because he thought the Lord had called him to preaching. Well, okay, preaching is a part of the ministry, is a part of the feeding. You know, preaching is sort of like, you know, dumping the food in a trough that everyone can partake of it at the same time. But the job of anyone who's trying to minister for God, once again, formally or informally. I keep saying that because they don't want you to shut down saying, well, I'm not a pastor, I'm not a rabbi, I'm not a leader of a congregation, I don't need to listen to this. Everyone needs to listen to this. That ministry also occurs one-on-one. And if you don't understand what's happening in the lives of the people you are trying to minister to, you're not tending lambs. You're not tending sheep. That's also true of evangelism, by the way. Sometimes in evangelism, we're not tending lambs, we're shooting deer. Right? And you use different techniques for both of them. You want to tend the lamb. You want to bring the lamb along. You don't want to just try to take them out. And sometimes when you know, it's the equivalent when you're in a crowded situation, when you're doing street ministry or something, where you're throwing food to the lambs as they're running by and hoping one of them will stop and eat it. But you don't want to take out an arrow and shoot at them. So Peter said, yes, I do love you, tend my sheep, and then Yeshua is going to tell him what the consequences of that love is going to mean. It's going to be a big house, a big car, Mercedes, woohoo, BMW, is that what it's going to mean? No, verse 18, truly, truly, I say to you, when you were younger, you used to gird yourself and walk wherever you wished, but when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will gird you and bring you where you did not wish to go. Now he said, signifying by what kind of death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. So once it's almost like a second call in Peter's life. It started with the familiar scene of the boat on the lake and the miraculous catch of fish. And then Yeshua speaking to him three times to kind of undo the three-time denial. And now finally that culminates with, follow me, to that call once again to Peter to resume that relationship with him. And Yeshua just told him how he was going to die. And somebody was going to take him, stretch out his arms. Basically, he's going to be hung on a cross. And tradition is that he was hung on a cross upside down. But the tradition was that he was martyred. So, of course, you know, verse 20, Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Yeshua loved following them, the one who also had leaned back on his bosom at the supper and said, Lord, who is the one who betrays you? That was, you know, remembering back on the question. And so Peter, seeing him, said to Yeshua, Lord, what about this man? I guess he figured, you know, Yeshua was in a revealing kind of mood, that he was telling him all kinds of things that was going to happen. So John was his good friend. He had stood through the ministry of Yeshua, and you look at them, that they are always, there's always Peter, James, and John, and Peter, James, and John, and Peter, James, and John. There's always the three of them hanging out together. So he sees John over there, and he says to Yeshua, what about this guy? Yeshua said to him, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. A polite way of saying, it's none of your business what God's plan is for him. And we need to take that heart to heart too. Oftentimes we're looking around, we're seeing somebody who is doing abjectly terrible things and claims to be a believer. And we want to say to God, well, what about that guy? Why don't you do something about that guy? God's response is, if that guy truly is one of God's, God's response is, let me handle that. You do what you're supposed to do. I mean, you know, confront him, talk to him about what God's word says and all the rest of it. But then let God handle the consequences. It's all about, you know, it's God's plan for us. And even when we measure ourselves, because, you know, every now and then, you know, well, God calls us to be careful and to kind of examine ourselves. We should examine ourselves in comparison to ourselves. In other words, I look at my own life and say, well, I am doing better at conquering this sin today than a year ago. And I'm doing better in this area of character than I was a year ago. That is a legitimate comparison. What is illegitimate is to look at Harry over there and saying, well, I'm certainly better off than Harry is in this regard. My character is certainly better than Harry, so I guess I'm there. I'm arrived. Seems I'm so much better than him, and he's in your kingdom, so if you let him in, I guess you'll let me in. And matter of fact, I can even slack back a little bit, because if you're letting Harry in, I can maybe slack back a little bit so I could do things just like Harry does, and I'd still be in here. That's not what God says. God's plan for him and God's plan for you. In that situation, how do you know that Harry hasn't had sleepless nights where he's been tossing and turning and sweating over this thing in his life that he is not dealing with, that God's working with him, and you just don't see it? So it's about how God is dealing with you and not about God's plan for this other guy over there. Because that's none of your business in some sense. I mean, it's a little bit more of the business of somebody who's a leader of a congregation, but even so, once again, the idea is to make people dependent upon God. The relationship is not God to leader of congregation to people. The relationship is God to people, God to people, God to people, God to leader of congregation as a people, God to people, God to people, God to people. There is no hierarchy here. There is but one intercessor between God and man, the man Yeshua, the Messiah. That no one else stands between you. It is your own personal relationship. Verse 23 is one of the reasons why I'm sure this postscript was written. Therefore, this saying went out among the brethren that the disciple would not die. Yet Yeshua did not say to him that he would not die, but only, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? That's hyperbole for the sake of making a point. I could say, you know, somebody would say they wanted me to, drive down to Cleveland drive to Cleveland after I finish the service today. And I'd say, well, even if you paid me $1 million, I wouldn't drive to Cleveland. Well, that's not saying I will get $10 million for driving to Cleveland. That's saying, basically, if I even got $10 million, I wouldn't go. And so what Yeshua is saying here, that even if I wanted him never to die, that's none of your business. So it's hyperbole to make a point. And people twisted that around to say that Yeshua had said to John that he would never die. And that's not what the point was. Verse 24, this is the disciple who is testifying to these things and wrote these things, and we know that his testimony is true. Well, who's the we? I don't know who signed this. It's people in those days, some so-called scholars, look at this and say, well, this means John didn't write it. Well, people in those days had scribes. You know, they dictated things, and scribes wrote it. And they weren't just sitting at the word processor in their basement writing stuff. It was more a public sort of thing to write it. You generally had a scribe, and you maybe had some friends around when you were dictating it. And most likely, whoever crowd was there just simply chimed up and said, well, you know, we want to add our own attestation to this before it closes. Verse 25, and there are also many other things which Yeshua did, which if they were written in detail, I suppose that even the world itself would not contain the books that would be written. So what things were written? Back in the end of chapter 20, it says, but these have been written so that you may believe that Yeshua is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in His name. That was His goal. Anything that contributed to that goal, He wrote down. Anything that merely satisfied our curiosity was not written down. It's sort of an expansion of what I just said about John, none of your business. In a sense, God says to us about the details of Yeshua's life outside the plan of redemption. It's none of our business. It's none of our business. It's not like He had paparazzi around Him all the time. Nor would He have accepted such a thing, such a life. He came, He ministered, He died, He rose. That's really all we need to know. So all the rest of the details, everything else, we don't have books and books and books. I mean, even a person who has accomplished far less than Yeshua, you look at his biography, and his biography just expands, you know, several volumes, and people make miniseries out of it. That if you were to try to write the life of Yeshua and try to dictate all He did, I'm sure you would have a book that was bigger than all of Scriptures just to write a biography. But this is not a biography. This is an accounting of the plan of redemption, and that's what is important about it. Leading from His very start of ministry in John, other Gospels take you to His very birth, all the way through to the end, and His final charges to His followers. And besides going out into all the world, which is what the other Gospels relate, this one, the charge to Peter and the charge to anyone who seeks to minister to anybody at any time, is feed His lambs, shepherd His sheep, and tend His sheep. You've got to realize they're not yours, and you're not a cowboy, and you're not a CEO. You're just the sheep in charge of taking care of the other sheep. And you're not the star of this show. Yeshua is the star of this show. And the person you're ministering to is the co-star. And you're just an extra in the plan. That your job is to take care of these other people, that they might grow in Yeshua. And it's not about you at all. Unless, of course, I'm trying to minister to you, then it's all about you, right? Let's pray. Dearest God and Father, thank You so very much for all that You have taught us, all the people You've brought across our path, all the role models we've seen of people who truly desire the welfare of others, who truly desire to tend your sheep and feed your lambs and shepherd your flock. I ask that we might have Your attitude in us, that we may see the ministry not as an opportunity for our own personal advancement, whether it by reputation or even by finances, but rather that we look upon ministry as a service to those whom You love so very deeply, and that when we stand before You, that we might truly be able to give a good answer when asked about, what about this person You minister to, and what about that? That we might truly know them and share some of the great love that You have for them. That we might minister to them in love and truth and not try to use them for our own advantages. And we do it all for the glory of our Messiah, Yeshua. Amen.